Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, today is a big day for writer Louise Neelan, because today is the day she launches her first book, her first novel, and it is the thing of dreams for her, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like other people want to be professional footballers or doctors or vets or painters or whatever, or run a flower shop, but you always wanted to publish a book.
Yeah, ever since I held a book in my hand. I can't even remember the first time I held a book in my hand, so this is a lie. But ever since I knew that people wrote books, I wanted to write a book.
See, there already, you're searing honesty there. You wouldn't even lie about remembering the first time you held a book.
Yeah.
That's you, isn't it? In 30 seconds, that's you. And that comes across in the book. Congratulations, I devoured it. I loved it. And people always want references, don't they, when it comes to books? Because they need to know what genre it is, what's it like.
Yeah.
So I think it's somewhere between Pat McCabe and Marion Keyes.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
I take that as a massive compliment.
Well, it's meant as a massive compliment because it's brilliant. And I just loved it. There's a great sense of place in it. The characters are brilliantly written. And it's a real page turner. And it looks good too.
Yeah, it looks great, doesn't it? I had nothing to do with the cover, right. But I'm so delighted with the way it turned out.
So how do you feel? How do you feel today?
Today's the biggest day of my life, Ray. I feel calm, a real sense of calm.
I'm emotional now.
Yeah, I'm stuck between, I never thought that this would happen. I never really imagined myself. Some people dream of their wedding day. And I've always dreamt about my book launch. But I never had any of the details kind of filled in. And the details that have been filled in reality is just so far beyond my expectations that it really is like, people say dream come true. Like, it's so far beyond right. what I expected. And I'm so pleased and proud of my 18-year-old self, who would be absolutely, like, mind blown that I would be in this moment right now. So I'm just trying to take it all in, really.
All right. Well, yeah. And because, you know, I'm just looking at the plaudits on the cover. Wonderful, says Roddy Doyle. Beautiful and truthful and touching, says Marion Keyes. A novel for anyone who's ever felt lost in the world, says John Boyne. Tender, laugh out loud, funny and deeply moving, says Louise O'Neill. So it's all, well, they're hardly going to put negative ones on the cover.
Exactly.
In fairness. So it's obviously fiction, but there's a huge chunk of you in it.
Absolutely, yeah.
So let's find out a little bit about you, just remind people about you who don't know. So you're from Kappa.
Yeah.
Which is where?
So Kappa is just off.
I know where it is, but this is for the listeners.
It's in North Kildare, just outside Kilcock.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're from a farming background?
Yeah. Grew up on a dairy farm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And who's at home?
Mum and Dad are at home, and my siblings and their respective partners. So Michael, Sarah, and Catherine, and Cahal, Stephanie, and Paul, and my little niece Sophie.
Okay.
And we're all in the same bubble. It's like a commune down there.
Nice. So there will be celebrations tonight then?
Absolutely. And they've all taken the day off work tomorrow.
Oh.
So
right.
We're really
going for it.
So
what's the plan for the launch?
So I'm heading down, like, I'm leaving here.
Yeah.
It's been great excitement, like, breaking the day off. Coming up here, and so I'm arriving home. Then we're going to have a virtual launch at 7 for about 40 minutes. I'll be chatting to my editor and Q&A and all that, and then we're going to be dancing from right. from 8 o'clock.
What sort of tunes
hours.
Will you be playing?
Oh, loads.
90s hits, I suppose.
90s hits, yeah.
So Debbie is the main character in Snowflake, and she, like you, comes from
a dairy farm.
Yeah. Goes to Trinity College, as you did.
Yeah.
Finds it very difficult,
as
you
did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Suffers with her mental health, as you
as
did.
As I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's as near to memoir as you could get in a fiction.
It is novel. And it isn't.
Right.
The thing about fiction that I love is that I can take all these bits of myself, and I'm writing in the eye voice, and a magic thing happens where the character starts looking back at me. And they become a character in their own right. And they start doing things. Debbie started doing things from day one that I wouldn't do because she has a different life to me. Like, I don't have a Billy in my life. I don't have a Maeve in my life. And I don't have a Xanthi in my life. So I had great, it was really difficult to write. Like, it's hard work. I'm not saying that it happens by magic, but if you sit there and work hard enough, the magic does come. And with Debbie, I really felt like the energy spark when she started doing unexpected things. And I know
that,
like,
is sort of odd. Like, yeah, us mere mortals can't understand that, Louise, in fairness.
But I'm as mortal as you, get.
Yeah, yeah, no, right. I know. You know, but you're a very talented writer. and the process, because people have described it to me before, it's nearly a subconscious process, is it?
Yeah, yeah. So for a long time, I bet myself up because I always wanted to be a writer and I always thought I should be writing a certain thing. And then I learned about, this sounds very, but I learned about wavelengths, like brain wavelengths.
Yes.
So like beta, say, is like where you're like really, really concentrated. And then you have alpha, where you only let a few things in. And then you have theta, which is kind of like a meditative state. Mm. And you write out of, I write out of theta. And I think that a lot of writers do, where you're kind of like half asleep. And I think someone had a great line that, like, literature is a dream gone solid, which is like really relevant for
yes,
the novel.
It is because yeah. Maeve, who is Debbie's mother, mm-hmm. has a thing about dreams, and you have a thing about dreams.
Yeah,
explain it to us.
Yeah, so the book comes from when I dropped out of college. I had a really strange dream that woke me up in the middle of the night. And it felt like I wasn't myself. And I don't mean that in a, you know, the way Irish people say, I'm not myself. I really thought that I had slipped into someone else's subconscious, and I felt really mad. And I tried to explain it to my doctor, and he was really kind and generous, but you don't really have space within a medical diagnosis to explore, I think I'm dreaming other people's dreams, you know? The space,
so that's
where it came from.
That was the crux of it.
That was the crux of it. So
you thought you were dreaming other people's dreams.
Yeah, and so I for years and years, I tried to chase that idea. And it only happened to me once. And it was very difficult to explain. And it seems like pure and utter garbage.
Well, I have to investigate a little bit more, if you don't mind.
No, you're grand.
Was it somebody that you knew?
No. See, the dreams in the book, they changed. They're not like the dream that I had. They just for the plot and... I hate using the word plot, actually.
Why? Why do you hate using the word plot?
It's a very heavy word.
Is it?
Yeah. It's like getting a digger in, you know?
It's sort of, you can see the machinations of it, can you? Is that it?
Yeah. I never really... it's more so like... Do you know the way, like, when people are making music, they don't really... You think about the melody, but it comes naturally.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, when you bring in a plot, it just breaks everything. Even though it is there in the end, in the way that a song, the melody is there in the end.
Yeah. So Maeve, who's Debbie's mother, she believes that she dreams other people's dreams. And then you, there's an instance in it where where Debbie does as well. Sorry, where Debbie
people
does
do that all the time. People just like assume that I'm Debbie.
Yes,
and my dad has loads of one-liners that are great, and I always stuck them in the book for Billy. So like when my relations read the book, they were like, oh Jesus, like your dad, like you gave him a good time, but your poor mother. And I was like, my mother is not me.
So Billy is your uncle who lives out in a caravan at the back of the farm.
Yeah.
And he's a very well-read man, very funny man.
Yeah.
Because there's loads of laugh-out-loud stuff in it, but he has a problem with alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
so there's good. There's a lot of mental health issues.
Yeah.
Like, I think everybody has a mental health issue. All the characters do, don't they?
Yeah.
Is that to say we all do? I wonder.
That's the thing.
Is that your experience of the world?
You were talking about trying to place the book in terms of like a market, you know. Yeah. And I think we do have a tendency to label things. And sometimes it's very useful to label people, and other times I get very, even the words mental health, they don't really sit right with me. They seem nearly too polite to be talking about, like, you know, just the messiness that everyone has in their lives. And I don't want for a minute to sit here and consider myself less well off than another person, or for people to feel sorry for me because I had, like, I suffered with mental health issues or I had depression and anxiety. I'm no different to you, Ray, or anyone else listening. I think if a person says that they have depression, what they're really saying is they're not sure how they fit into the world. Like, right. They're not sure how to make a real connection to the people around them. And I think we live in a very, a world that facilitates a kind of loneliness, and like making connections is kind of difficult.
I wonder, is that because we're not that honest about what's going on in our heads?
Yeah.
Because if we shared really the truth of what's going on in our heads, then other people go, oh yeah, that happens to me as well. That's what I think as well.
I think that's what friendship is. Like, when you, like, admit your own vulnerabilities to another person and trust them with that. And I don't think everyone feels safe to put all of themselves out there all of the time. And that's completely okay.
Yeah.
But,
But you do.
I don't really.
No.
But
you've been quite honest about your, and open about your mental health issues.
Yeah, but the reason that I am is because I want to help another person that was in my shoes and, like, give them hope. Okay. You know? So that's the reason why I'm speaking about it.
So you dropped out of college.
Yeah.
Was it overwhelming? Was that the reason, or?
Yeah, it was a bit overwhelming. I had a tendency for perfectionism, which people think is a good thing. I used to think perfectionism was a good thing until a very good doctor told me. He was like, I think it's a bit of a neurosis. And I was like, oh yeah, no, it is. Because you're afraid to do things unless they're going to be perfect. And so you end up doing the same things over and over again because you're familiar with them. Whereas with college, you're just thrown into the world and you can be whoever you want to be. And all I wanted to do was completely retreat into my bedroom and read a few books and connect with the world that way.
Right.
So yeah, I think if we're a little bit more honest about the college experience, college doesn't suit everyone, you know? And like in a number of ways, like, and I strived academically, or tried to strive academically, in order to kind of, like, validate me being there. But I look back on that, I really think, like, I feel sorry for that, like, girl, and I just want her to say it's okay to get a 2-1, like, you know, it's okay to get a B in an exam. Like,
did it not become okay to get a 2-1 or a B?
Yeah, with our generation,
is it
very, very, very hard on ourselves. And I think it is, it's a generation split between, like, the likes of my dad left school when he was 14, and my mom was a nurse, and they had very practical jobs. And I think our generation, speaking from my own experience, I felt very lucky to be able to go to college. And a lot of emphasis was placed on education, not only from my parents, but from society all around us. And if you're any way academically inclined, I think the Leaving Cert kind of sets you up to have a perfectionist streak in you.
Yeah.
Because you're always aiming for the 600 points, you know.
The A. You're always aiming for the A.
And then it's not okay. You become to associate that with your self-esteem, which is never good for your self-esteem in the end.
Which brings nicely on to the name of the book.
Yeah, Snowflake.
Snowflake. And you wanted to claim that word back for what it is, a thing of beauty. Is that part of it?
Yeah, so I got the title from a Sylvia Plath poem called The Night Dances, and there's a gorgeous couple of lines at the end where she says, why am I given these lamps, these planets, falling like blessings, like flakes, six-sided, white, on my eyes, light, my lips, my hair, touching and melting nowhere. And I absolutely fell in love with that poem. And I didn't really realize that Snowflake was so huge in the zeitgeist. And then I chose it as a title, and then I took a double take at it, and I was afraid to use it as a title then. I stepped back from it, and I suggested it to a couple of friends, and they were like, nah. Because I knew that, like, they had to market the book somehow, and I'd be called a snowflake for the rest of my life. Yeah. But that was okay with me then. I decided that, yeah, like, if we live in a cynical world, and if someone takes the word snowflake and uses it as an insult, and it's so beautiful, like, I just wanted to claim it back a little bit for what it is.
Would you be acutely aware of your generation? See, I'm not aware of my generation at all. I wouldn't know what even I'm called. I don't know what generation
mental,
I'm from.
It's mental, isn't it? I think that's... But there's a shift in that as well, because the relationship between Billy and Debbie, like, they're from different generations.
Maria,
and it's only recently, it's going back to the labeling thing as well. Like, if you label people with mental illness, if you label a book, if you label someone by their generation or their age bracket or their gender or their sexuality, you're limited them in some way, and we're forced to think about labels an awful lot more in my generation. So it's kind of like to catch that and then just kind of try to fight against it.
Yeah, because there's a pub scene, isn't there, around Christmas, mm-hmm. where they're all there, and like, I've so many fond memories of pubs in Kildare, and the generational thing was sort of fudged, dissolved by alcohol maybe, but if somebody who was 19 was going out with a 30-year-old, for example, it wasn't, nobody really batted an eyelid. Because nobody cared. And that was, although, like, Billy was given out to you that maybe you were going out with
demands. He was given out to Debbie.
Oh, Debbie. Not me. Right, sorry.
It's all right.
It's your own fault for writing something that's nearly biographical.
Not nearly biographical.
No, but
it's not nearly biographical.
You have a lot in common with Debbie.
I do, but that doesn't make it.
No, I know. Sorry.
Or biographical.
No, it's not. I know. No, people will know that.
No. See, right? They don't. They really don't.
Do they not?
No.
I think when they read it, they'll know. Yeah. I like Billy as a character. I know so many. Well, I don't know. I'm one or two guys like him.
Yeah. You know, everyone kind of fell in love with Billy, which I find interesting, because I find him a really, really deeply problematic character, because I think he's a bit of a control freak.
Right.
Like, he's white knuckling it. He wants Debbie to live life his way.
Okay.
Whereas I have a real graw for Maeve, even though everyone thinks that she's mad.
Yeah.
I think that there's a bit of Maeve in all of us, really.
She dances naked in the necklace.
Yeah, went a bit too far there. But yeah.
Listen, Marina, I could talk to you all day. You know, we talked about this the last time, but the comparisons with Sally Rooney, how are they sitting? Is there going to be more of that now that you're launching the book?
Yeah, I'm so glad that the book is being launched and I can talk about the book rather than myself and the characters rather than myself. I'm a massive fan of Sally Rooney, as I said before, and I see her, like, I see my relationship with Sally Rooney as a reader-writer relationship. She's the writer and I'm the reader. And I don't really think, like, I think if we were both carpenters, I don't think there would be a comparison between our work.
No,
or plumbers, you know.
I was going to say your tables look completely different.
Yeah, and I don't think people would be interested in the process.
No, but I suppose she's been such a huge success.
Absolutely.
And
such a
cultural phenomenon.
Yeah,
you know?
And a trailblazer
as
well.
Yeah, and
so
that's
massive.
And like, the scenes we're talking about, similarities, like, you are talking to Element, and this is going to be made into a TV series.
Yeah, well, very, very early stages, but they're excellent people to work with.
That's
such
very
great
exciting.
People. Yeah.
Is it real to you? Is it become more real as the day goes on? The fact that you have your first book and it's there in front of you.
Yeah, it is.
And there's an audio version. You've listened to that?
Read by Orla from Dairy Girls.
All right.
She's amazing. She's so good. And I was kind of a bit hesitant to give it away. I wanted to read it myself. But I'm so glad I did. She did an incredible job. And it was really nice to hear the story. Because I wrote it more than a year ago now, so I forget it a bit. And it's so nice to hear someone outside your head interpret the words in their voice.
So, which begs the question, like, do you hear the dialogue in your head? Do you hear Billy talking to Debbie? And
oh, absolutely, yeah.
You hear that.
And I always, my poor sisters and my brother, I always played with invisible friends when I was younger. I was like, my teacher was worried that I was unsociable, but she just couldn't see the people that I was
hanging out with.
You know,
you had a great circle of friends.
I really did. Albeit social
invisible.
Butterfly.
And, which I'm sorry that I'm going to this question next, but how are you? You know.
Oh, in general, my mental health hasn't been better. When I got the book deal, I went back to therapy. That's the first thing I did, and found a brilliant therapist. I'm training in therapy at the minute. I'm doing a course.
Right.
Nothing big, but just a couple of hours a week. And
psychotherapy, is it?
Yeah, it's a course.
Yeah, because you have to go to therapy to be a psychotherapist, don't you?
Yeah. Very, very early days now, but dipping my toe in.
Okay. And what's next? What's
Another book. It's a two-book deal. I'm really excited about the next book.
And is it completely different, or are the same characters in it?
I can't say.
You can't say, right?
Yeah. Like a politician.
Right. I'd love to know what happens to Debbie, to be honest.
Thanks, Ray.
Yeah. Congratulations again, Louise Nealon. Snowflake is in shops now. You'll recognise it because it's blue and orange. And enjoy tonight and do a lot of dancing.
Thanks so much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.